This is the Winning Plays Podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider for the NBA's winningest franchise.
Hey folks, welcome in to another edition of the Winning Plays Podcast. My name is Brian Robb, joined by frequent contributor to the pod, Ryan Bernardoni. And we bring Ryan in here, as is tradition, on the heels of Rob Williams playing one of, I'd say probably one of the best games of his career, period, Sunday night against the Rockets. And we're going to get into that. We're going to get into some trade rumors that have popped up, particularly involving the center position and how that kind of relates into the Rob Williams conundrum, if you will, that Brad Stevens and the coaching staff will be having to deal with in the coming weeks as Marcus Smart gets healthy. But first and foremost, please rate, review, subscribe to the Winning Plays Pod on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. It is much appreciated. But first off, we'll go to Ryan here. We'll just scale. Like, where do you rank that performance by Rob on Sunday night in the career power rankings?
I guess the only thing that holds it back is that the level of competition was less than stellar. you know, if it had been against Christian Wood or something.
Come on, Justin Patton doesn't
rate it up a little bit. Justin Patton and no other centers really, right? It was a pretty degraded team from where they've been over recent years. But I mean, what are you going to say? Like, he had a double-double. He didn't miss a shot. Or I guess he missed a free throw. He didn't miss a field goal. Block shots. He's stealing the ball. He's turning momentum around. He's, as he does every single time he plays, making some ridiculous finishes that seem, you know, you see some of those passes that are thrown to him. And we've just been conditioned by recent Celtics lob throwers of like, oh, that's a turnover. Like, somebody's going to get injured because of this terrible lob. And it just somehow it becomes a basket when he's on the floor. And you had another one yesterday with Smart throwing like a rocket of a lob. It wasn't really a lob. It was like a line drive. And somehow Rob just goes up and very softly drops it through the hoop. And you're like, I don't know how that didn't go Justin Patton seven rows deep. So it was a very impressive performance other than the level of competition, but are there any unimpressive performances from Rob in the last month or 6 weeks? Like, every time he's on the court, he looks great because he's really talented and playing very well. It's very promising for his career, for what the team needs out of him. And you hope that not only does it continue, but that his role is able to expand off of some of these performances, which I know is sort of what we want to talk about here, is how we get to there.
Yeah. So that's where we'll start from a big picture perspective, I think, here. Brad Stevens spilling the beans on Sunday night that yes, Marcus Smart will be going back into the starting five, despite coming off the bench for the last two games as his minutes limit goes up, and which seems to signal the end of the double big lineup for good. Rest in peace, double big lineup. The defensive stoppers that really have never came into fruition, at least for the first 35 games this year. But it's clear that this is going to lead to a bit of a minutes crunch. We've already seen Daniel Theis held to under 10 minutes in two of the last five wins for the Celtics simply because other teams are going super small and it makes no sense to play two bigs against them. So when we look at this right now, well, I guess first off, is there any, if you're power ranking the centers right now, it's going to depend on matchups, obviously, but is Tristan Thompson the third best center on this roster against everyone at this point? Or do we think that could change based on the opponent?
Maybe there's some specific matchups where you'd prefer Thompson, but I think it's pretty clear. I don't think there's a huge gap between him and Theis, right? It's not like it's a Rob is number one and Theis is two. And then there's a, you know, you sort of are like, well, obviously, you know, is it Taco? No, I mean, that's Thompson's been playing pretty well for what you're expecting from him. It's just that for all that people look at the Celtics and say, oh, the center position is their big problem. Like, Theis is good. He's fine. And Rob is what he is. He's mercurial, maybe, although he's, you know, like I said, been pretty consistent lately, but can just do things that are really special. And so Thompson, yeah, I mean, I think he's pretty clearly the third center. And it's some of, I don't know if it's as much matchups as it is just like the flow of the game, right? Some nights guys have a good day and some they have a bad day. You get a little banged up from an injury, you get foul trouble, whatever it might be. And it's nice having a third center who you can rely on. The problem is trying to play them all like they're second centers, right? And they sort of all get backup center sort of rotations and minutes instead of having anybody establish as your top guy and a second and third, who's an, ideally your third guy would be getting some DMPs and things like that. And that's just not the way that it's working at the moment. So yeah, I mean, to me, it's Thompson's pretty clearly there. Are there matchups that come to mind for you? Because people think of him as, I sort of think of him as the bulky one because Thompson, or because Rob and Tice are not super, you know, they're not sort of thought of as like post battlers and on the defensive end, but really obviously Thompson sort of made his name as more of a, more, almost a switch center. So I'm not sure what the matchup would be where you would want him over the other two. Is there, you know, ones that come to mind for you where you're like Thompson's the guy against somebody? I don't know.
All those matchups have not, you know, fared well this year. I feel like where you'd be like, okay, yeah, like Thompson versus Embiid, that's your best option in that matchup. Like that, he was roasted just as much as anyone in that one. Yeah, and then you,
isn't that Thompson's a good matchup for that? It's that you're just worried that the other two are bad matchups,
right? It's like the worst of two, but then it's when you look at that matchup and you're like, okay, Thompson isn't giving you much more defensively than either of those guys would. And then on top of it, your offense is so much worse than when he's on the floor based on compared to those other two guys. So that's, I think that's just the Tristan Thompson problem that has emerged this year is his D. I don't know whether, again, it's halfway through season now. His defense has gotten, I think, slightly better, but the switchability that I think a lot of us came to expect from him has kind of fallen off as he's, you know, reached his 30s here. And with that aspect of his game gone, he's not a great defensive rebounder, period, too. He's a great offensive rebounder, but he's, you know, his size is an issue and down low. And so if he's not making bunnies and he's not kicking out to guys for threes, then again, unless he's becoming, you know, his energy is at a high level for a certain night, you're the cons outweigh the pros compared to, I think, the other two centers on the roster a lot of nights.
I guess maybe the kind of player who you would like him against, and this a little bit counterintuitive, although we've seen him go against Al Horford through the years, is sort of an Al Horford type where you would say, well, Tice can do a little bit of everything, and the guy who he's faced up against can do a little bit of everything, but a little bit better than Tice can. And you might be looking at something where it's like this team struggles with defensive rebounding. Your opponent struggles with defensive rebounding. You're like sort of specifically targeting something like that, where it's like, okay, we think we can make hay on the offensive glass against a particular team, where like the Raptors have been playing very small with Ananobi and at center, or Siakam at center, whichever one you want to think. And you would think that would be a bad matchup for Thompson. It's like, you would want to go even smaller, but if you're assuming you're going to play a center, you might look at that and said like, well, we think we can make up for what we're going to lose on one end by going at them on the offensive glass. Right. And so maybe you put him in over Tyson, a matchup like that, but you're talking about things where kind of speculative and you're maybe trying some different things, and you wouldn't really want to rely on that or believe from the start that would be the best matchup. And so that's why I get to, it's like some nights you can just see it, right? Tice is off for whatever reason. Everybody has rough nights, or Thompson is looking like particularly good on a given night. But if you go away from the double bigs, then you're not going to have an opportunity to see that, right? You just have to trust that the guys who are better are going to be better. And in that case, Thompson comes into the game if it's a back-to-back and you're trying to steal some minutes from, you know, without burning anybody out, or somebody gets foul trouble, or they're just really struggling that night and you go for a different route. But I think that's sort of why we've seen him win minutes in some games now, is because they're both on the floor together. And so you do have an opportunity to evaluate. The problem is, if one of them is playing poorly and you have double bigs out there, the time when you're evaluating them, you fall behind by 10 points. And then it's like, well, that wasn't worth the evaluation time because you fell behind. So like, there's just no great solution for that in the modern game, where you just kind of want to have a hierarchy of centers, because you don't, it's not a position you want to have to put too much thought into in a certain way.
Bet online is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but NBA, college hoops, and the NHL are in full swing. Bet online even covers awards, TV shows, reality TV, real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. Bet online has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up Receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, your online sportsbook experts. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action. Don't forget to use that promo code CLNS50 to receive 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Once again, bet online, your online sportsbook experts.
So it's looking at the situation now with 10 days till the trade deadline here. And it seems to be coming more and more clear that it's unlikely something major will happen with the TPE in these next 10 days. But at the same time, that doesn't mean other secondary moves around the rest of the roster can be made. And, you know, this addressing this excess is one clear spot. Chris Haynes of Yahoo today had a report that the Celtics, and it wasn't really, it seemed more speculative than anything else from, you know, an agent, whoever is involved here, but saying the Celtics, quote, could trade Tristan Thompson ahead of the March 25th trade deadline. And he listed the Toronto Raptors as a potential destination, which, I mean, if you look around the league in terms of who needs a starting center more than anyone right now, that would be an obvious choice. I guess first off, do we look at the center? One thing the Celtics could do here, and this is where I look at their decisions for this year as fascinating right now, Ryan, is like having a three-headed monster at center does make sense for the versatility standpoint. You can, you know, give Thompson and Tice nights off as the games pile up here and keep everyone kind of fresh. And the injury backup situation would obviously, you'd be in a better spot if you keep all three there. But if you're going to lose one of those two guys next year anyway, and you're not making the roster better to contend in the present, does it make sense to keep all three of those guys for the rest of the season? Like knowing what's probably going to come this offseason?
Probably not. I mean, we talked in the preseason about how it didn't necessarily make sense to have all of them. And that depending on sort of how the season played out and where they needed to get help and what Rob showed, that it may very well be that one of Thompson or Tice gets moved. I think one thing that has happened in the last couple of weeks is that you would have to get somebody like really seriously good in order to trade Rob at this point. And I don't know. I mean, it's possible, but that doesn't seem likely. So you're left with the other two. And I do agree that like having three centers is a necessity. Thompson, if he's willing to be a third center, is totally fine at that option. Like you don't want to be paying a third center $9.5 million next year, but for this year, it's not, you know, it's fine if he's okay getting DMP'd sometimes and on other nights playing one or two rotations and all that. Like, I don't have a problem with needing guys to rest and needing depth at every single position. But yeah, I think the question really is like, if you could trade him and then go and sign Norvell Pell, right? Like just somebody who's tall and is somewhat reliable and has a little bit of NBA experience and is going to understand that they're a third center, would that make your team any worse? I don't really think it would, particularly with, you know, getting back to health and having more options on the wing in the backcourt. So that's what I would prefer that they do. But somebody has to want the player. My concern is that what happens is they play out the season with all three of them. And then you get into the off season and they look and they make, you know, an acquisition of some amount and either they lose Tice for nothing, which is fine, right? It's not great, but it could be what it could be. Or they could say Tice played really well through the end of this year and they want him to come back and be sort of a normal 1-2 punch that we expected with Williams. And then they have to trade more draft equity to move Tristan Thompson again, just like they did with Cantor and Baines, who weren't like bad players. There were teams around the league that wanted them. Cantor's playing fine this year. Baines played well at the beginning of last year for Phoenix. They had to give up stuff to get rid of them. And if Thompson is your third center, then you get to the end of the season. If you haven't traded him, you probably do have to give something up just to get rid of his $9.5 million. I don't really want to do that again. So I would rather, if you can, move him now. Like I said today, when that report came out that you just referenced, like, you could just trade him for Aaron Baines. And like, I would think that would be totally fine because Baines has a team option next year.
Right. And so that
you just decline the option and like done. You've undid what turned out to be a mistake in signing Tristan Thompson, which isn't like a huge mistake. It wasn't, you know, he's playing fine. I wasn't like super against it when it happened. With what was left, I was like, yeah, all right, it's fine. I get it. So I don't know. I mean, like that isn't the kind of thing that anybody looks at and gets excited about, but like, I would completely understand it if they did that.
Right. I guess from that standpoint, I don't necessarily think you're going to have to, like, given how much free agent money is out there next year and how the lack of talent, not at center, like, I don't necessarily think dumping him for nothing next year in the offseason will be a problem. I don't think you have to use draft equity to do that.
But they've had to the last 2 years. That's the thing. Like, teams wanted Baines. The Portland wanted Cantor. They didn't have to take him. Like,
right.
He ended up there and anything for him. That's like, if everybody knows that you're trying to move a guy for whatever reason, and the reason they'll be trying to move him is because they could have a big luxury tax bill if they go out and get somebody else using the TPE, right? And everybody will look at that and say, oh, they're going to move him because he's going to cost them $25 million in terms of like actual money. And so teams aren't just going to take him. They're going to demand something for him. And that might be second round pick, right? It might not. I don't think it's going to be a first round pick. And the times they had to do it before, they sent out a first and they got back seconds. And the amount of like actual draft equity that moved around wasn't huge. But you just don't want to be in a situation where 3 straight years, you're like, yeah, we signed this center for multiple years and it turned out we didn't want him. And now we're dumping him to go sign another center to replace him. And so if you could move him now without having it be any cost, I would just be like, yeah, that's fine. And like I said, then you just go sign somebody else. You just minimum contract some guy who's like hanging out there who's fine. I'm not saying like Andre Drummond when he gets bought out. I mean like literally somebody out of who was in like the G League bubble or something. And I don't think it would hurt you unless you run into a whole bunch of injuries. And if you do, you're probably screwed anyway. So what difference does it make?
Right. That's a good point from in terms of what injuries would do to your overall chances anyway. So, all right. So you would, I wrote today that I would balk at just doing that straight up unless you're going to get like a second or some kind of sweetener from Toronto for Thompson. But I guess, yeah, like if, you know, the Baines, if you think Baines is going to be okay in that third man role, and obviously he's going to be better than anything you're going to get on the street. And you, I guess you do have that salary for trade purposes if you need to use it in the offseason, like if you need to pick up that option just to make the money work on a deal, but you also have the TPE, so that shouldn't be necessary anyway.
Yeah, I literally think of it as just like getting back out of the deal, basically saying like, if you could undo it and get Cantor back, would you? And like, I don't really want Cantor back either, but in the grand scheme of things, it's like, I just don't really want a $9.5 million third center next year. Now, if you think like, if you look at the market, and you say that Tice is going to make $15 million and Tristan Thompson going to be my backup center next year, then that's fine. You could keep him and just move forward thinking that Tice is going to be gone. All like, none of these things are like needle movers by any means, right? It's just, you can look at it and depending on what you think about Daniel Tice and what you think the market is going to play in the offseason, it would be completely reasonable to me that they could make a move like that. That would just seem like nothing. It would just, okay, why did you bother with that? And I'd be like, yeah, no, I mean, I get it. It's fine. Whatever. I understand why they would do it. And so from that, like, that's where we are with Tristan Thompson though, right now, I think, where it's like, he's not playing poorly. He's not playing great. It's just kind of too much on the roster. You want to rebalance it. And sometimes you rebalance by making a trade that everybody sort of shrugged. We ranked every trade that Danny Ainge has made, right? Some of them you look at and you just kind of shrug and you're like, yeah, I mean, I was fine. I get it. And there's not a whole lot more to it than that.
Right. And I guess it's pertinent to, for now, I think more than anything else in the standpoint of like, this is a one obvious area to address in the next 10 days. Like we said, like waiting to the off season to do this. If you have outs now, whether that's Toronto, whether that's another team where you can, you know, just do a straight salary match for Tristan Thompson or get, you know, take someone else on a different part of the roster. So you can at least, yeah, you're losing Thompson, but you're getting, you know, Belitz or something fringe that helps you somewhere else. And maybe is a better use of maximizing the current roster that you have while also freeing up minutes for Rob Williams, because that is, I think as the year goes on, as we saw what he did in the bubble last year in terms of Rob Williams, like the impact he made in like the matchup against the Raptors in the second round, where I think he was probably the best bench player period in that series and won them a game or two with just like some pretty big scoring bursts in the first half of those games. Like you want to, the consistency is reaching a level now where I think you need to, if you're Danny Ainge company, just try to push that forward as much as possible, even if it does end up costing you, you know, some money down the line in terms of whatever extension you're going to try to get him to sign.
Now we're talking my language. yeah. So I don't think that I'll push back a little bit. I don't think it's the only obvious thing to do at the trade deadline. Like I think the same problem that they've had since the beginning of the season still exists. And maybe they just don't have any way to get that done. But like, they do need another, they need a big wing still. They need somebody to fill those minutes and to take some of the pressure off Jalen and Jason and to improve the team. They absolutely still do. And it may be that there's just no deal to be made and that they're, that's what they've been seemingly indicating. But like, to me, that's a much more important part of the team than what they're going to do at third center, to be, you know, to
for
be
sure. Honest. Yeah. I guess it's more like, it seems more realistic based on, again, how they've talked publicly about it in terms of what, and who knows, it's still like a lot can change in the next 7 to 10 days as teams change priorities.
Because if you get through the trade deadline and what they've done is that they've resolved their third center spot, like that's a bad trade deadline for where the team is and what was set up in the offseason and all that, as we've talked about numerous times. I would consider that to be a failure of a process from the offseason to the trade deadline. But yeah, I mean, on the bigger point there, like Rob needs to play more. He's an outrageously gifted player. The offense just looks different when he's out there. You know, coming in, he was defensive player of the year in his conference, and the shot blocks and the steals and all that are still there in really sort of incredibly high volume on both blocks and steals. But I think what showed last year in the bubble is that he's a really gifted offensive player who just helps everybody else. There aren't enough players on the team who help everybody else on offense, which is something that's been a popular thing that's been talked about lately, about how Jalen and Jason aren't sort of natural playmakers and Kemba isn't a Chris Paul style point guard. You can put Robert Williams out there and he has a 15% usage and it just, everything seems easier regardless. He turns the ball over a little too much. He has a good passing instincts, but he doesn't get a lot of assists. He doesn't have a lot of usage. And you sort of think like, well, that player shouldn't make everything that much easier on everybody, but he just creates space on a team that doesn't naturally create a lot of space. And I think there's like a ton of value in that, and just sort of giving everybody a little bit of breathing room. And Tice creates space in his own ways. And that's really, I think, largely what you get down to be the difference. We talked about defense and about switching and who the matchups are and all that. But a lot of it is like Tice, he's not a great 3-point shooter, but he will shoot the three and he creates, and he's a good passer on the short roll. And Rob, we know what he does on offense. And Tristan just doesn't really do a whole lot on offense. And the things that he does do, even when the ball goes in, are generally negative things. You don't want to build your team around Tristan Thompson, baby hook shot, posts up all the time. And he doesn't really do anything else on that end. And that's why you need to create minutes for Rob. It's because he just, even though he doesn't touch the ball that often, his simple presence greases the wheels for everybody else.
Right. And I think when you just look at the complexion of this team right now too, it's like, where is this version of the Celtics going? Like, to win when it matters, how are they going to do it? It's going to be with offense first. Like this is, and there's been injuries, there's been obviously needs for upgrades in other parts of the roster, but I think even at its best, this is like a, you know, a slightly above mediocre defensive team, but it can be a top five offense when everything is going right based on what Brown and Tam can be. If you have Rob out there, if Smart's hitting threes, if Kemba, if you're getting the good version of Kemba, which is starting to become more consistent. But that's like, that's how this team is going to be the best version of itself. And so Rob Williams helps this team do that, I think, more than Tristan Thompson does because that of everything you just talked about. And so like leaning into that more, I think, is a way to figure out what this team is actually going to be capable of.
Yeah. And the other thing that you get out of it is you get like variability. Right. If you're the favorite, you want a stable series. This is something that Daryl Morey sort of built the Rockets around before it. They became more Harden centric, obviously. But the original idea of it was like the way that you overcome the Golden State Warriors is that you want to just inject uncertainty into the series. So we'll shoot a lot of threes because threes are uncertain and they do different things to a game. And you can win a couple of games because you have hot shooting. And if you don't, then, oh, well, you're going to lose the series anyway. You just lost by a few more points. So who really cares? And that's a little bit of what Rob brings as well. And because we haven't seen him play 28 minutes or 30 minutes, he continues the level of play that he does in 18 minutes, in 30 minutes, then like that's really valuable because how well he plays in short bursts is like crazy. And if you played him sort of traditional starter minutes, then it would just be variability. And when you get to a series against, because the Celtics are not the best team in the Eastern Conference, they're certainly not the best team in the league, And if they were the best team in the league with Tyson Thompson, then you probably wouldn't be sitting there going, we need to get Rob Williams. Even if Tyson Thompson were sort of uninspiring, that's fine. Teams can win games with an uninspiring one position as long as they're really stable and sort of give you the same thing every night. But if you want to beat the Nets, maybe the Sixers, we've traditionally been a good matchup against, maybe you can beat them anyway. Or, you know, the Bucks are going to, if you were to somehow make it to the finals, like just having a wild card out there is kind of good, because if you don't and you just play it straight and you're going to lose anyway, like who cares? If he has a bad series and he throws the ball away a couple times because he's, you know, the lights get a little too bright and he's not used to being out there, so you lose by 8 instead of 4. And it's like, you know, what difference does that make? But if he has a good series, and if he just sort of breaks out and has these performances that we've seen from him, then maybe that wins you a game. Like you said, he, you know, maybe won a game in the Toronto series, and that's a 7-game series. And in a big series, maybe he does. Smart's sort of the same way with his shooting, right? Like you want Smart to shoot in games where you aren't sure if you're going to win. Like he won an Eastern Conference Finals game against the Cavs because he was like, well, I'm just going to shoot a whole bunch. And if they don't go in, we'll get swept. And if they do go in, we'll lose in 5. And so they lost, you know, he won him the game just by like being like, what the hell? Like what, who else is going to take these shots? So I'm going to shoot from 3 and some of them are going to go in. Like that's okay. That you, that is actually like a viable strategy if you aren't the best team. So I think he also brings that. He brings a lot. He's really good. Like everybody can see it. I don't know. I don't want to ramble for too long here, but one of the things that I find funny is that I think there's a little going on right now where people are watching the video and being like, look, he's setting better screens. He's making better defensive reads. You can do these little video breakdowns and say, look, he's doing this better. And the reason he's getting playing time now is because he's doing this and doing that. He's a better player now. And yeah, I mean, I guess that's true. I believe that Brad sees some of those things, and that's why he's maybe giving him some more minutes. But to a certain extent, you can look at his statistical profile this year versus last year and be like, he's at the same, he's got the same block rate, he's got the same steal rate, he's got the same assist rate, he's got the same turnover rate. Like he's getting a few more offensive rebounds and he's taking a couple more shots, like literally like one more shot a game, because he has players who are slightly better at throwing the lob to him. But he was really good last year.
And the bubble? Like, just think about the bubble.
He never played. Yeah, oh, absolutely. We were all calling for him to play more then. This isn't like some new thing that everybody's like, you got to play Rob more this season. At the end of last season, everybody was like, why is Enes Kanter playing? Look at what Rob Williams can do. And he just wasn't trusted yet. And he seems to have, you know, gained that trust. But I do think it's a little bit funny that, like, people are trying to come up with all these reasons that he's better this year. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, he's a little bit better. But some of it is literally, like, he's getting one more offensive rebound and dunking it. And everything else is the same. Yeah. It's just, it looks a little smoother. So I don't know. I love him. He's really great. He's so good. I hope they find a way to sign him to a like reasonable extension this year before he does start playing 30 minutes a game next year and posting double doubles every single night. And, you know, because I think that that's coming for him in his career, as long as he can stay healthy, which is a question, right? That's the big question with him.
Right.
Health above everything else, above all the, you know, sort of brain farts trying to throw outlet passes and all that stuff. The big question is really health. And if he stays healthy, he's going to have a long career where he does some just outrageous things.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, for a 20, is he still 23? Yeah. So it's a situation, right? Where like the bet on him for the impending extension negotiation this offseason is how much are you, you're essentially just weighing his health versus everything. Like, I think that's like the real, there's clear on-court downsides, but they're vastly outweighed by the, you know, his improvement defensively, which comes and goes. Like he's had a lot of, you know, the stinker still exists out there where, you know, he's still biting on pump fakes the 3-point line and just getting completely lost in the pick and roll at times. But those games are becoming fewer and far between, and he's offsetting it by blocking James Harden 3-point shots and doing other things that your Joe Schmo center is just not capable of. So you have to rolling with the good over the bad is becoming easier. And that's where like you said, now you want to extend that sample size in the minutes and seeing like, okay, we know we can do this in 20 minutes. He doesn't look as gas now in these games. So what can he do in 25 to 30? Can he stay out of foul trouble? Can he put up 15, 12, and 3 a night? And what did the Celtics look like? What does the Celtics look like with him in the starting 5? Because he, you know, having like, right, like having him just to eat up everything on the offensive glass and maximizing spacing for everyone there. Like we've probably seen that lineup maybe like under 10 minutes in his whole career, at least in the last 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, so one of the things I want to just throw in there is I agree that he does some things wrong and he makes mistakes, but so does every other player.
Right.
Right. Like, there's no, who is this perfect player who isn't making these mistakes? Now, some of the things he makes are sort of visible and funny, but
egregious.
Tristan Thompson getting an offensive rebound with two guys wide open at the 3-point line and pump faking twice and throwing up a hook shot is a mistake. And just because he's a veteran who's been doing it for years and won a title on it, you know, it doesn't mean that that's not a mistake. And when Daniel Theis can't catch a lob because he's not as athletic, it's not a mistake, but it's a limitation. And so Rob has limitations and he makes mistakes. So do Daniel Theis and Tristan Thompson. And so does every other center and every other player in the league, other than like LeBron, right? Everybody makes mistakes. And why it is that young players make a mistake and that's the end of their night, and veteran players make mistakes and it's like, well, he must have had some brilliant reason for making that mistake, or, well, we can overlook that, is something that it doesn't, you know, doesn't quite make sense for me. And so I always sort of want to throw that out there, that everybody does make mistakes and not just young players. Starting him, I don't really have a problem with the number of minutes that he seems to be playing now, right? Playing him in the 20 minutes-ish. He would have played over 20 minutes last night if it hadn't been a blowout, I think. That playing him reasonable minutes is fine, particularly with his injury history. The problem was when he was getting DMPs and when he would play 16 minutes one night and 6 minutes the next night. Consistently giving him backup center minutes is fine. And if you want to get there by starting, and I know Jared Weiss wrote something today that was like, and you wrote something on starting him as well. And you made sort of different points as to why to start him. And Jared's point was like, well, you want to up the level of competition, right? You want to have him playing against starters to see if he can play against starters. And you were talking about, just like you did, about you want to be able to see what that does for your spacing and how that sort of builds a 5-man lineup so you get there in the playoffs. So from that standpoint, I completely am fine with that. But in terms of like minutes, he's not going to play 32 minutes.
No.
Maybe he will in the playoffs, but like he's just, they're not going to play him those minutes. Not just because of the glut of centers, but because they have questions about his health.
Right.
But yeah, the team, like, there's a 5-man unit there of Kemba Smart, Jalen Jason, and Rob Williams that I am absolutely certain would be a really positive, very good lineup to play. That would make everybody, all five of those guys would complement each other and they would make each other's lives easier. And they would be good on both ends, I think. And they would cover up from different, you know, different limitations that each of them have. And we'll see it in the playoffs, I assume. But I don't think we're going to see it for, you know, 10 or 12 minutes a night quite yet, even if I would be totally fine if we did. I think it would be a good idea.
Well, yeah, like even at the end of the first half, like have Rob play a stint, get him a rest. Mm-hmm. And then when the starters, when you get those usual 3 or 4 minutes at the end of the half where you usually get the starting five, like throw him in the mix there, here and there, see what that looks like. I agree, because yeah, you're not going to get him. I don't think, you know, no matter what happens with Theis and Thompson, one of those guys is going to stay, and they're probably going to stay as the starter for the rest of the year, because that the reliability they provide defensively is something Brad Stevens is going to be more comfortable with. But that shouldn't preclude you from, you know, tinkering with what Rob looks like with the starters. So, and like barring you just wanting to be a surprise in the playoffs for teams so they can't really plan for it, I think the advantages of actually seeing what that group looks like, you know, here and there, for so they have a little bit of experience under their belt together, should probably offset the potential pitfalls of it.
Yeah, I think the word's out on that. I think the league sort of knows that he's good. Maybe they didn't at last year when he played literally 300 minutes, or they just didn't think that he was actually going to play. Obviously, there were bigger injury considerations for last year that thankfully haven't happened this year, although he hasn't, right? I think this year it's been more he had COVID versus having hip injury, really sort of direct stuff. So I don't know how well you can hide him, because the simple fact is when he's on the court, he stands out.
Right.
And so how do you hide a guy who's having, you know, 18 minute double doubles with perfect shooting, or a guy who's got 5 blocks or who blocks James Harden or anything? Now, I think one of the things that's, I talked about how, right, like you can focus on these little things about video stuff about, oh, look, he's doing this better, he's doing that better. I think one of the things that has been noticeable in that vein, and again, I'm not saying those things aren't important. I was just sort of making the point that he was good last year too. It's not, these improvements have not been completely new. Is you did see a couple of matchups. The one that stood out to me was against Valanciunas. He's, you know, skilled down there. And that's always been the guy who you worry about. And it's, again, it's because it's Embiid is there, right? And you look at Embiid and say, well, he's 5 inches taller than Robert Williams and 100 pounds heavier. And like, will he be able to handle those matchups? And you always sort of think of more of sort of defending in space. He has had a couple of matchups this year where he was playing against sort of more traditional post-up guys where he was completely fine. And that I think is actually a big deal for the amount of minutes that he can play and how consistently you can get him on the floor. Cause at this point, I don't really know who the matchup is where you're like, we can't play him because Tristan Thompson or Daniel Tice is so much better of a matchup for those guys. If you had somebody who was 7-1, or if you had Derek Favors or somebody like that, who sort of specializes in that type of matchup, then that might be a little bit different. But with the guys they have, they can play him every night, barring foul trouble or injury, 22 minutes, 24 minutes, whatever it might be. And they should, because he's best. He's the best of the three. So play him. And we just keep saying that, right? I don't know how many minutes we've been recording here, but we just sort of keep coming back around to that, being like, yeah, he's really good and he should play. It's, I don't know.
Well, you know who else should, what I want to see more of?
Carson Edwards.
Yeah. A lot more Carson. I got to look this up right now. The Tice Time Lord minutes have been very interesting.
Yeah. They've been better than the Thompson Tice minutes, but that's like not saying a whole lot. And you can obviously tell why. It's because Tice's spacing creates at least a little bit. Like I was saying, Rob creates space and Tice creates a little bit of space and Thompson doesn't create any space. And so I think when you put them together, you can like eke out enough space for things to work. And so that does seem to be a lineup that has worked better to this point. I also think that it helps that Rob can pass the ball a little bit. Again, even if his passing numbers don't look great, we know that he does have the ability to pass the ball a little more. And so both of them have like a little bit of passing that helps, I think, make functional lineups. Is it terrible? Are you looking up right now?
And it's I'm looking it up. No, I'm looking up. I know it's very good. I'm just trying to get to, I think it might be like the best.
Is it the best?
Over best on the whole team under, let me look at this.
Other than Peyton Pritchard and Jeff Teague.
Right. No. So here we go. This is the best lineup. Guess they've only played 66 minutes together. 12 games.
Like five times as much as the guys we think are their best five have played together.
Right. And plus 28 net rating.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
120 offensive rating, 92 defensive rating. So that's when you're the defensive presence has not been there. And I don't even want to look up what the Tice Thompson.
That side is mostly that the offense has been just brutally bad, right?
I think the defense is early.
Maybe it's come back up. No, so both were bad. Both were certainly bad.
So the offense is fine now with that group. So the offense, so it's a plus, it's a 0.5 plus negative net rating. So it's actually a positive line now, Thompson Tice, 375 minutes. Their defense allowing 113 points per game, per 100 possessions, excuse me. So. And then the offense is the same though, 113, which is pretty much an above average offense in today's NBA. So we saw in the starting five last night, that group just, I mean, they can't stop anyone really, it seems like. And so even whether they're playing teams that go big or teams that go small, it's just they're winning games by
doing
offense. It's just not a good lineup. And it just
everybody knows it's not a good lineup.
Right.
Brad Stevens knows it's not a good lineup. He's known it's not a good lineup for a while.
But is it going to go away? Reasons,
whatever.
Is it going to go away?
Well, I mean, he said that it's going to go away pretty much. I mean, he said that, but it's not going to go away because of Rob. It's going to go away because it's Smart. I mean, Rob, part of it, because if he had been playing really poorly, then it would go away in a different shape. But mostly it's because Smart's coming back and Langford's going to come back and they're going to need to find minutes for him. And hopefully they make a trade that adds another player without taking somebody out of like the core part of the rotation. And that will further change the shape of the team. So you think it has to go away, but who knows? Brad never ceases to surprise with his decisions about who he wants to play. And he's been, I think over the years, been pretty consistent about the lineup, like the type of lineup he wants to play, that he doesn't want to play two bigs and things like that. But he's added that little wrinkle to his history of surprises in some big situations, which usually have worked. I mean, right. You have to say that. It's not that he always gets it wrong. Oftentimes they work. Like I said, we started with Ennis. I said earlier about Ennis Kanter, right? Like, I didn't want to see Ennis Kanter, but like, you can't deny that last year Ennis Kanter was totally fine. Brad played him a lot and like didn't kill the team. We make some surprising decisions. We'll see. I don't know. I'm rambling again. No, I'm podcasting.
This is what we do. This is a podcast. It's made for rambling. All right. That will put a bow in this one. We'll be back with you guys plenty here at the Winning Place Pod in the next couple of weeks as the rumors start swirling more and more as trade deadline heats up, as the Celtics potentially make their first addition since the 2014-15 in season, I should say. But for now, Rob Williams, 20 minutes per night, count on it going forward, and keep an eye on what happens with Thompson and Tice in the coming days, as we see some, I don't know, I think, what's your prediction right now on a trade? What are the odds at for you?
On any trade?
For a Celtics trade, yeah, any trade.
I still think they have to do something. I don't know, 75% they'll do something?
Yeah.
75% they'll do something bigger than, like, exiling Jeff Teague.
Yeah, right.
They'll do something
above that. Okay. All right.
I think they have to still. I know they're saying that they're not going to, but, like, I don't know. It just seems, are they really going to run this team through this gauntlet of through the end of the season and then just, like, I don't know. That seems like a bad idea.
Well, with 5 games and 7 nights, they'll have a good look at to see if that's a good idea or not.
They have 5 games every 7 nights for the rest of the season. Like, people are maybe like, oh,
I know, that's true.
Coming up in 12 games. And it's like, yeah, like every 12 game stretch from here to the end has 8 games in it until like the last week of the season when I think they have a break. It's a ridiculous schedule. And they're not the only team, obviously. The like entire league has a ridiculous schedule. But that's part of the reason that you can justify having 3 centers, as we've talked about. But you could also really use another wing of some kind who you trust to play some of those minutes. Jalen can't play 40 minutes every single
game. You're right. I think asking those guys, especially when every single game the Celtics play this year seems to be close, barring a random blowout against Houston or Cleveland. But like, I think they probably, I like to like, they have more
clutch minutes than clutch, available.
Exactly. Me, right? Which is not surprising when you look at the roster, but also something that, you know, if you want to have anything left in the tank in the playoffs for your top guys, you probably want to at least A, either give them some reinforcements, or B, get a better team just so you don't have to be in that situation against the parity of both conferences right now below the top 5 or 6 contenders. All right, so that'll do it here. Follow Ryan, as always, at Danger Card on Twitter. You can catch us at Winning Plays Pod for any feedback, suggestions, etc. And
you gotta shout out your relatively new gig at this point too. Just follow me. You gotta follow Brian and masslive.com.
You can read me at masslive.com. Thank you, Ryan, for looking out for me. Yes, but yeah, so hit us up. Plenty of coverage coming on Mass Live throughout the next couple weeks and beyond. And we will talk to you guys later this week.